Blog Talk Radio.
The All About You show is brought to you in part by Mindscape, The Art of Transformation, and Vera Heart, developing heart-centered, mindful, transformed, energized people and companies. And now let's get on with the show with my very special guest, Frank Guzzo, on overcoming personal tragedy. Frank, good morning. Thank you so much for being my guest today. I do appreciate it.
I know we've talked about this for quite some time.
Yeah.
And we're finally doing it. Yay.
Yay. I know. You see, what the listeners probably don't know, it's not a lot of things that I share, but you and I go back years ago, back with, you were involved with and still are involved with Connect My DNA. While we've never met in person, I do have to say that the hours that you and I have spent on the phone over the course of, 8, 9 years, has been some of the most interesting, wonderful, thought-provoking conversation that I've had with anybody. You know, you are one of those engaging, thoughtful, reflective individuals, and I think that's why you are one of my most favorite people. So even though I've never met you. Even though I've never met you. Yes, that you truly are one of my most favorite people, and I love and appreciate all the conversations that we've had over the years, and I think this is well long overdue, having you as a guest on the All About You show, and we're going to be talking today about overcoming personal tragedy and then going forward to build a life. Now, you personally have your fingers in just about as many, if not more, than I do. And everything that you do is truly transformational. But it kind of, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, all started almost 17 years ago. And why don't we start there and we'll move our way forward with what happened with you over when you lost your teenage daughter.
Well, thank you, first of all, for the introduction. That was very kind of you and very kind words. I really appreciate it. And we've had some great conversations. And, you know, oddly enough, years later, my client is still the DNA company that created those products, but we're doing so much more. And it's really cool to see how technology is changing, you know, every year and whatnot. And I'll have to share some of that with you another time. But in any case, I've had a yearning. You know, as you go through life, you ask these questions, you know, why am I here? What's my purpose? You know, where am I going with all of this? And it never really started coming together until, you know, years ago. Obviously, you know, I was going through life, got married, you know, had a child and was working, doing my thing. And then out of the blue, out of this, you know, what seemed to be just sort of an average life, wake up one day and get the phone call that, you know, my daughter, you know, can't move and she's in bed. We're taking her to the hospital. And that's kind of where it started. And that began a two-year process of, you know, dealing with what the final outcome was going to be. Because the long and short of that story was that when we finally made it to one hospital and then transferred Laura to Sick Children's Hospital in London, Ontario, up in Canada, that's where we got the news that Laura had an inoperable brain tumor and that she was given 3 months to live. So for us as parents back at the time, I mean, you know, all of us sitting there, grandparents, parents, just listening to this was devastating. Isn't sort of a big enough word. It was life altering in many, many ways. And it just sort of put us on a path of, we've got to fix this. We, you know, whatever the doctor said is, yeah, you know what, let's do what we can, but we've got to find something else. We have to find a way to make this not be true. We really didn't want to believe it. And I think that's what it really came down to, is that, just, you know, this can't be happening to us. This is not what our life story is supposed to be all about. And yet the reality was that, you know, we were in a hospital and Laura was given 3 months to live. Fast forward, we, you know, started seeing naturopaths, homeopaths, and did all of the sort of the alternative things that we could do while we still did the traditional radiation to help, you know, reduce the shrinking of the tumor. And by the way, what she had is known as a brainstem glioma. And what a brainstem glioma is, in simple terms, it's a tumor that grows in the center of the brain. That's known as the pons, and it literally becomes part of the brainstem. So it as it grows, it just sort of infiltrates itself in and around the brainstem itself. And the brainstem, as you know, controls pretty much all your motor functions in the body. And so as it grew, or as it started growing, it would, you know, prevent her from, you know, walking or moving her hands. And eventually it would grow to the point where it would stop her from, you know, she would have trouble breathing or swallowing. And
oh, my God.
And that's sort of, you know, what she had to look forward to. And so we did whatever any parent, I believe, would want to do, which is find a way to not make her go through this. You know, and there's all kinds of thoughts that sort of ran through my mind, and I can, you know, I won't speak for her mom, but, you know, what went through my mind was, you know, why her and not me? You know, why now? Why, you know, and then, you know, why me? Why am I going through this with my daughter? So it was a difficult time. The long and short, though, was, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think at that point in time, don't you feel like you are all alone and nobody else is going through anything remotely close, no matter what they're going through? You know, nobody is going through anything like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It felt so isolated and alone in the world, and nobody could ever understand, you know, what I was going through. There was just no way. And
right.
And I did feel isolated and alone. And even though, you know, we were there as a family at the time, it still felt like we were in, you know, sort of incubated, and that there was nothing that anybody could do to help us. So,
right.
Yeah, we did feel very much alone. And that's, you know, that's part of the growth process that comes, you know, further down the road. But, you know, it's interesting because I've never, you know, as part of that process, I've never been able to speak openly about what happened that long ago, and yet it seems like, you know, just a day ago.
Right.
And it's, you know, it started with, you know, a blog that one day I thought, you know what, let me just put it in writing and see what comes of it. And then what I found was that in my blog, which probably, I think it happened, the first time I wrote was 10 years after she had passed away, people started commenting, and then I discovered that there were others that had been through, that had suffered loss, not exactly in the same way, but they had suffered some loss, whether it was a child or a spouse. And it gave me a sense of comfort to know that there were others that understood to a certain degree, you know, what I had gone through and what I was feeling still at the time. So, and I think that's part of the healing process that we all go through, you know. But Laura, you know, the doctors gave her 3 months. You know, we were blessed to have her live a healthy 2 years beyond what the doctors thought, you know, she was going to survive. And, you know, we believe that it was really because of all the other things that we were doing, which was, you know, working with homeopaths and sort of the non-traditional medicine. And it helped. It helped her tremendously. She, you know, she graduated. You know, in Canada, they graduate from grade 8 and get ready for high school. So she graduated with her friends, which was really nice to see. But she never made it to high school. She passed away September 13 of 1999. And it was, you know, it was I don't even have the words to sort of describe how that all happened. I was reading the original blog that I wrote this morning. I was reading it, and it just brought back all these memories of sort of the minute by minute or second by second replay of that entire day. And I don't know if it's something that you want me to share with you or not, but it was, it's all part of that process.
I would love you, if you don't mind. I know it's very personal, and I appreciate that, you know, this is the first time you're speaking publicly about your loss of your daughter nearly 17 years ago. And I would love it if you would share some of your thoughts a decade after the loss. If you don't mind.
Okay. You know, when I looked at my blog this morning, I read through it, and I remembered the tragedy and the heaviness that goes with it. And one of the things that always stuck with me was, you know, when my daughter was born, I was the first one to hold her in my arms and, you know, and show her proud to the world. And when she passed away, I was the last person to hold her and carry her down to the hearse that took her away.
Oh, my.
And it was that sadness and that heaviness and that heartbreak that sort of I remember. But when I went, about a year later, I was talking to a friend of mine who had just lost her father. Actually, she had lost her father 3 years earlier, and we were talking about, you know, death and dying and loss and how do you deal with it. And one of the things that she said, and I've always remembered this, was that eventually the sad memories are replaced by all the happy memories. And it was true, and what happened was over the years I forgot about the suffering and sort of the hard things that we had to go through, and I always remembered and, you know, will always remember, you know, the fun things that we did and, you know, the places that we went and all of the things that sort of made her life so enjoyable and so worth, you know, being a part of our lives and all of that. But through all of that, I always wondered and questioned why. Why did this happen? You know, what was I supposed to learn from this? And it took a long time because after she passed away, I went into sort of my dark space and kind of checked out. Didn't care about anything. You know, I worked because I needed to work and it was just something I had to do. But I really was very sort of lived this careless, I don't want to call it dangerous, but just, you know, I've isolated myself from my family and just went off and kind of did my own thing and really didn't care about anything or anybody else because I didn't even know I was doing what I was doing until years later when I started evaluating where I was at and looking at my life as a whole. And then that's when I really started to look at, you know, what happened and take a sort of look at everything from a different perspective. You know, what's the spiritual perspective out of all of this? What am I supposed to learn from, you know, losing a child, which, you know, is, in my mind, one of the hardest lessons anyone can ever go through in life. And so if I started looking at it from a different perspective and really took a hard look at it, it made me ask the questions and then look for the answers. And the answers came. It took a while. It took a long time for the answers to show up, but they did. And they started changing my life. And I started looking at my life and what am I doing with my life? And I know. And I still look back at, you know, my life with Laura, and I have regrets. And my if I would have known that she was only going to be around for 14 years, would I have spent every waking moment I had with her? Absolutely. So, but then that changed how I view my life or my relationship with my family, with my friends. You know, what is meaningful? What means more to me now than more than anything, for example, is with my parents. My parents live in Italy. And I will call them two or three times a week. I will visit them at least once a year. I would love to do more. And, you know, and I look for ways to just stay engaged with them, because I know that, you know, their time here on earth is limited, and I do not want to have the regrets, later on, that, you know, I wish I would have spent more time with them. I wish I would have visited more often. I wish we could have done more things, you know, together and whatnot. So that's just one simple way of how,
right,
you know, I changed my perspective on, you know, how I was living my life.
Yeah. What I hear is, what I hear you saying is, you know, is that life should be lived without regrets. And our time here truly is very, very fleeting. And you never really know how much time that you have. So, you know, my father, just to share, and I've shared this with you before as well, but he passed. He was very young. He was 58. So I'm like 5 years away from, you know, that point. And with my father, he was somebody that I actually, he lived in Florida, I lived in Illinois, and my father and I talked every single day for at least 2 hours. And my husband could never understand how I could have so much to say, my father and I, you know, from one day to the next, and still find something totally new and different to talk about the next day. And when I was on the phone with the hospital in Florida, he had been in the hospital prior to his passing, and I wanted to come to Florida. And he said, you know, please just stay where you're at. He said, I don't, you know, there's nothing for you to do here. Doctor's got it all under control. That is the one regret that I have, is that I actually listened to him then.
Hmm.
He was released on a Friday, had a massive heart attack the following day, and he was gone. And I was on the phone with the ER department waiting for the whole entire time while they were trying to resuscitate my father. And I went into a very dark, dark place. I mean, I railed at the heavens and screamed, and, you know, and I, like you, I ignored my family. I worked because I had to, but it was like there was no enjoyment in what I did. There was no enjoyment in anything that I did, and I love life, and I live to laugh, and I didn't have that for a very long time, and that set me on another path. You know, it's like, why, you know, why? He was way too young. He was 58. He made a difference. You know, he was a publisher and a speaker, and he was a defendant, not a defendant, but he was a pro retirement and making sure that the older generation was not getting ripped off. I mean, my father had a phenomenal, phenomenal life, and to have it cut short when he still had years and years and years, as far as I'm concerned, you know, to continue to keep what's known as the Treasure Coast in Florida, he stopped the progression, you know, of building down there at the time, because it was just, he was a forward thinker even back, you know, from the time he was a kid. And what your friend said is that you do remember the happy stuff. The sadness is replaced, but it's the physicalness that I miss even today. And I don't know that I will never not miss that, you know. Losing a parent is hard, but parents should never, ever have to bury their children. There should be some unwritten law somewhere, you know. And I found it interesting I found it interesting that as you were describing the first one to hold her and the last one to leave her, you were her alpha and her omega. And I think that that in itself speaks tremendous volumes to who you were as her parent. There is so much that we don't know about death and dying and why, you know. I've since come to new understandings and new revelations that, you know, fit with where I sit now, as I'm sure you have. And your blog started you on a whole new path of doing and where it's led you, and this that period of, and I don't know how long it was, and if you said and I've forgotten already, I apologize, but that period of darkness that you went through, that is, I think, the most horrific time, is because you do feel alone, nobody understands you, and we are, you know, why should I continue, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I have a family, but, you know, big whoop.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind
exactly.
of like how I felt.
Exactly.
You
this
know?
This is about me. This is about me. It's my life. It's important to me, and it doesn't really matter what anybody thinks, says, or does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there are so many people who, you know, you really actually find out who your true friends are, because even, you know, your true friends will love you even though, you know, you're in your deepest, darkest hour. And those that don't know how to deal with that, they tend to go away or pretend like you never had a child or never had a parent, or, you know. And I found that I think I found the most heart-wrenching when it came to the living, you know. And I went through this phase where I just really hated people, you know.
Yeah.
And did you go through that?
I don't know that I hated people. I didn't care. I really was trying to think of the proper way to phrase it. But I was very indifferent towards, you know, a lot of people. Maybe, you know, even to the point where, you know, I had this very sort of narcissistic type of attitude that, you know, I am holier than thou sort of thing, and that nothing can touch me, and I don't care what you say or do. It doesn't matter. But the funny thing is about that sort of dark period, I really don't remember a whole lot about it. I don't remember. I mean, I know where I lived and, you know, when I was, but I don't remember the specifics. I don't remember what I did. I don't remember the things, the people that I met and that sort of thing. And, we'll go through a phase and it just kind of goes away. But, you know, you mentioned something earlier that, you know, you'll always remember, you know, the happy times and the happy moments. And I think, you know, without making it sound like, you know, we're always sad and, you know, tragic and whatnot, it's we will never forget. Those memories will always be there. And the questions, some questions will always remain. Like, you know, today Laura would have been, not today, but, you know, at this point in her life, she would have been 31 years old. So I do wonder. I wonder. You know, would she have gotten married? Would she have had kids? Where would she be living? And in my mind, I come up with my own, you know, sort of. I visualize it and say, yeah, you know, she'd probably be living, you know, close to me, or she would have grown up closer to me, and, you know, we would have done all these things. Or, you know, it's hard for me when I see something that's, you know, I'm trying to think of something like going to Disney, or, you know, see the Bellagio fountains going off, to which to me are just, you know, fantastic, and I love watching them, and they're very emotional. And to look at something like that beautiful and stand there, you know, and look at it and just wish that my daughter was there to experience and see the same things. But it's no different than me wishing that my mom and dad were there to see the same things as well, because I wish for them to see those type, that the beauty that I get to experience, which is, you know, and I've been blessed through my life, even though, you know, I lost a child, I still have to look at my life And I do look back, and I do believe that I've been blessed. And even with my daughter's passing, and it took a long time to get to that point, but even with my daughter's passing, I still feel I've been blessed because through her passing, it forced me to grow and change and learn. And not to say that I needed that, you know, that I willed it or I, you know, but that's the life. This is the life that I chose in this lifetime. And that kind of plays into a lot of other things when I say that.
Right.
But this was part of my experience. This was part of my journey. What am I
right.
going to do with it? You know,
right.
what can I do with it?
Right.
You know, I can't change the fact that it happened. So what can I change? What can I do differently? How can I make it count? If it's something that monumental, what can I do today to make that count? What can I do to make her life count? And so that's the sort of the perspective that I have to take on life. And it's not, you know, I'm not great at it or perfect at it. I'm learning. I'm a work in progress, just like I think most of us are.
Sure.
And, you know, we learn and live and grow. And it's kind of funny because when we talked about doing the radio show this week, when I write a blog, I'll get an idea and then I'll just sort of start the blog on, you know, in a Word document. And then
mm-hmm.
I'll just sort of set it aside for later. And I have this folder where I have all these unfinished blogs. And so I started going through it the other day when I knew we were doing the show today, and I pulled one up and started reviewing it. I'm like, yeah, I don't really feel like talking about that. And I pulled up another one and read through it. It was actually almost complete. Read through it, and the blog was called Three Questions Answered About Death and Dying.
Right.
And I read through it, and I'm like, and I decided to change a few things in it, but I don't want to use the word played, but it actually spoke to, you know, what we're talking about here today and what, you know, and the questions that we have when something like this happens, whether it's with a child or with a spouse or a friend, you know, what happens when we die? You know, where do we go? You know, is there a life after death? I mean, those are the questions I think that we all have. And so I decided to write about it. And it, you know, and that goes back to a conversation that, you know, we had some time ago where I talked about, you know, the work that Dr. Michael Newton did.
Right.
And how that one individual changed my perspective on death and dying.
Right.
And what an amazing man, what an amazing book. And so I wrote about that in this blog, which I'll publish later this week.
Awesome. I can't wait to read
it. Those are the things that we all want to know.
Yes. Well, you know what? I just had a thought while you were talking, because you are a phenomenal writer. I do read a lot of what you write, and you had just said something, you know, in wondering, you know, what Laura would have done with her life. Would she be married? Would she have grandkids? And I thought, you know what? What a great book that would make, the Laura stories, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
I'm actually
wondering,
I'm considering a book.
You know, what
it's
would
true.
Have, you know, what would have happened? I had another tagline for that, but I've since forgotten it. So sometimes
yeah.
it's like, whoop,
you have to write these
out.
Things down. You have to write these things down because I have to remind you, as we get older, we tend to forget certain things. So I've got notes
everywhere. I remember the Laura stories that I remembered, but you know, but
yeah.
from the perspective of a parent on losing a child. You know, what would you have liked to have seen happen with her life? And then what you wish would have happened for her. I think that would make a phenomenal number one bestseller, in all honesty. And nobody else can write that, only Frank. So if you're listening.
I know, but some of the,
don't take
some
that.
Of the answers, I think, though. I think some of the answers would be very self-serving because her mom and I divorced before any of this all happened. And so for me, it would be, oh, gosh, yeah, Laura would come, you know, she would have lived with me. I would have gotten her a car. She would have gone to university. I'd have given her a credit card. She could have traveled Europe. I mean, I envisioned sort of the, you know,
but
the grandiose
perfect.
Life that I would have, you know, loved for her.
But in a perfect, you know what, not that life is perfect, but you know what, in the situation, you know, you have, all you have right now is hindsight looking back. if you had forward sight, right, from the age of 14, knowing what you know, you would have done more, you know, with her. So if you were to just start from that point and go forward with how her life would be, you would, you know, probably wind up rocking grandkids in a chair somewhere, you know, or teaching the kids how to whittle custom spit in Sicily. You know, I don't know if that's legal
that's
over there
like
or not,
it.
But,
I
you
think
know,
that's closer to the truth.
You know, but it would be from your perspective and self-serving. There's nothing wrong with that, you know, and I think that that would be a beautiful book, one I look forward to reading. So please do write it.
It's a great idea, and I agree. I think it'd be fun to write, you know, a book about that. And, you know, and here's one of the things that I discovered when, you know, we were going through all of this, and we spent weeks and weeks in the hospital. Laura wasn't the only one. You know, what it tore me up. One of the things that, you know, being sort of on the pediatric ward was seeing these children who
right.
were helpless. And one kid in particular, I remember one day I was standing in the hallway and this little boy couldn't have been more than maybe five, potentially six, who was so frail. He had lost so much weight. I mean, he was literally almost just skin and bones, walking with an IV pole, you know, with wheels, and he was using it to sort of support himself as he kind of drug himself through the hallway. And it reminded me of, like, you know, what an old, you know, someone who's really old and frail, you know, in his last days would do. But here it was a kid, I mean, just a child who hadn't
right.
lived life, and he wasn't the only one. I mean, they had this wall of all these pictures of all these beautiful children that had come through there, and some were still alive and some had passed. And how sad, how tragic, you know, is that? And then that's when, you know, one of the first realizations was, you know, we really aren't alone. Many, many, other, even though we may not want to admit it,
mm-hmm.
Or I didn't want to admit it at the time, but it was all there right in front of me. Laura
mm-hmm.
wasn't the only one going through this. I, as a parent, wasn't the only one going through this. There were others that were suffering just as much and taking it. I don't know if they could take it any harder than I did, but they were taking it just as hard as I was, you know, when they were going through that experience.
Right.
You know, and then there was a program called Stand Up to Cancer. And I think it may still be on. I'm not sure. I haven't followed it over the last couple of years, but it showed all these people. I mean, it wasn't just children, but, you know, people of all ages that have passed because of cancer. And there were children. I mean, they were showing all these images of children. And one of the things that you could do was for a donation, you could name a star after your child. And I did that for Laura. Or after, you know, it didn't have to be a child. It could be anybody that passed away, but I did that for Laura. And it was hard to watch because all these people are dying. But the hardest thing is a child. And, you know, like you said, no parent should ever have to bury their own children. It, you know, it's true. And you know, we want them to live a better life than we have. We'll give them anything we can so that they can live a life better than ours and longer and healthier and whatnot. And when that doesn't happen, for me, I felt cheated.
Right.
I felt like that privilege, that opportunity was taken away from me, you know, because of that, you know, because of this disease. And so dealing with that was hard. So there's a lot comes into play. But, you know, back to your point about writing the book, and one of the things that, you know, I started working on is getting the message, not just Laura, because Laura had a message. Laura really had a message of altruism, of unconditional love. She spoke fluent English. I mean, her first language was Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Her, you know, everyday language was English because of school. She learned French in school because in Canada it's mandatory. And she also learned sign language because one of her friends was a deaf mute, so she could only communicate through sign language. mm-hmm. you know, not even knowing that when, you know, we came down to her last few days, she had to use sign language to communicate because she couldn't speak. And so Laura, I mean, that's the kind of person that she was. Anytime someone needed some help or wanted, you know, some volunteers, Laura was always there. She never sort of discarded anyone for any reason, be it race or, you know, ethnicity, you know, whether they were older or younger. She was always there. She was always willing to give her time to help anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And for a 14-year-old, I mean, that, you know, to me, that is someone, you know, that's a beautiful soul, you know,
mm-hmm.
who at that age, you know, understands what life is all about, you know. And here I was at the time, you know, in my, I don't know, I think I was in my 30s or early 40s, I can't remember. See, I forget. In this case, I don't mind forgetting how old I was.
Oops, there it goes.
But, you know, it's, you know, I hadn't figured any of that out yet. You know, and here
right.
she was, she did. I mean, I did those things superficially. She didn't. She did them from her heart, from her soul. So
right.
much so that when she passed away, her school brought in two school buses full of students. Some of them didn't even know her. They all came to the funeral home or to the church where we had her funeral. I mean, what
That's
a
amazing.
Sight to see as a parent. You know, and then they built a garden for her at the school, sort of as a memorial. I
right.
mean, who does that? I mean, who gets that? You know, Laura was just, not to say that other children don't deserve it, because they all do. It was just to sort of exemplify the fact that Laura really was giving us, the grown-ups, the example
right.
of how to
right.
live life.
And that right there, Frank, I think is the key message to everything, because children do that. They give us the example, the keys to living life, but we are so busy trying to build a life, we've forgotten how to live it, you know? And
yeah.
and children do that, you know? And it's your daughter sounds like she was an absolute amazing soul to know, and what a legacy that she left for everybody that she ever touched, you know, emotionally. And I think that is, you know, a very important point, you know, is that someone who is as genuine and comes from the heart, like Laura, that's the type of person, and I agree, everybody should have, you know, monuments and gardens, but she was someone who stood out, especially at such a young age. And
right.
And I think that what a very, very old, beautiful soul that you were blessed with having.
Yeah, and you're right. She was an old soul. And, you know, that really came through in how she lived. I mean, she was having conversations with me, you
mm-hmm.
know, when she was 5 and 6 and 7 that grown-ups usually have.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes grown-ups don't even have, you know.
Right.
But, you know, she would ask these compelling questions that, you know, were pretty incredible. And, you know, and it really just sort of resonated through everything that she did and how she lived her life. So
right.
there really is, you know, standing back sort of at a high level, looking down at everything that transpired over the course of my life, you know, I look at that as sort of, you know, the big pivotal event, the sort of the bomb that went off that changed the course or altered the course of my life.
Right.
And, you know, the ripple effects are still there. It hasn't
right.
dissipated.
Right.
And so I still go through all these sort of blips and changes and course corrections and whatnot. But it happened. And if we believe in, you know, past lives and living multiple lives, and that we really do choose the life that we want, that we live here on Earth, that we're living today, this journey, that we do, we choose this journey. And we volunteer to live this life and experience the things that we do. Then we begin to see that there is purpose behind everything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
There is complete order, even in the chaos, there is
mm-hmm.
order. Because when we see chaos, we see it sort of very flatline, very linear. We
right.
never, we don't really stand back, you know, sort of at a high level, 60,000 feet, looking down, going, oh gosh, well, you know, because of that chaos, it's changing, you know, it's doing all of this. It's changing the course directions for all these individuals. And, I mean, Laura was one person, but there were 400 people at the funeral. And so she touched the lives of those 400 individuals who then may have touched the lives of another, you know, each one of them may have touched one person or two other people. So it multiplies.
Exactly.
That ripple effect just goes beyond anything we can imagine.
Exactly.
And so our life, really, my life, you know, when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, is very insignificant.
Well,
but I play my part.
I wouldn't say that at all. You are
and I don't
like
mean
Laura
insignificant,
was.
Like I don't
Laura
mean
couldn't,
anything.
Couldn't stand, nobody can stand where they stand to see the ripple effect. You know, we're like, you know, I'm going to use the analogy of a pond, a stone skipping across a pond, right? And the stone, when the pond is calm, it makes this beautiful rippling effect. It keeps going out and out and bigger and bigger and bigger, and the pebble eventually drops to the bottom, having no idea of the beauty that is left behind in its wake. And I don't think anybody alive can see the amount of lives that they've touched at all. So I agree with you on a lot of points, Frank, but I will disagree with you because I know some of the difference that you've made in the lives of other people. So and that just continues to ripple out. And I think, you know, we all have that, but yet we feel like we're not doing enough, or, you know, we haven't touched enough, or we haven't, you know, lived enough, or that we're just not good enough. And I disagree with all of that. I think everybody is good enough, and everybody has good in them. And when it's utilized for things that Laura utilized it for, then it grows in its magnificence. And I want to share with you something. My youngest turned 12 in November, and those conversations when depending on, and I don't mean to step on anybody who's listening, I don't mean to step on any religious toes, you know, this kind of like supersedes religion, but when he was two, he wanted to build a time machine for me so I could go back in time and spend as much time with my dad as I wanted, right? And
wow.
He talks about that. He talked about that through preschool. He talked about it through kindergarten and first grade, second grade, third, and even today in sixth grade. But he talked about it so much between kindergarten and third grade, it was always a part of his report card, you know. Dylan
That's
is
funny.
An amazing student, you know, with such an incredible outlook on life. And when he has his time machine, let me know. Because I want to take a trip back and visit my daughter or my son or my parent or my this or my poodle or whatever. And I mean, and it was just amazing to me. And when he was four, he and my mother-in-law are like a day apart on birthdays, and depending on what day Thanksgiving falls on, either one of their birthdays will fall on Thanksgiving. Dylan. It was Thanksgiving, and he was four. And as we are unloading the car, because we had taken dinner over to my mother-in-law's house. As we are unloading the car, Dylan said to my husband, he said, "Dad, when we all die and we meet up in heaven, can we all come back together again? Because it is really fun this time."
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
It truthfully is wild because he'll also say that he was here before and he didn't make it. And something that I've never said publicly is my husband and I had a miscarriage. And I often wonder if that's this little 12-year-old, you know. But,
wow.
You know, he is, you know, children show us a better way to be. And a lot of us as adults don't quite
grasp. How old was he when he made
that
statement?
Four.
Sorry, he was four. You know, it's interesting. One of my mentors, Alexander Everett, who passed away, great man. One of the things that he taught was that children up until the age of about four or six know who they are and why they came here. And then right around that age, it's like a veil sort of comes over them and prevents them from remembering where they just came from the spiritual world.
Right.
And that plays right into what you just said, which is pretty incredible.
Yes. Well, he, like Laura, is a very incredible little soul. And his hero, outside of his parents, his hero is Leonardo da Vinci, which I find absolutely fascinating. And he'll educate me on da Vinci, that he wasn't just a painter. He invented the first tank, and he invented the first submarine, and he invented flight first. And I'm just like, okay,
wow.
You know.
That's
but,
interesting.
You know, I had heard that in all of the studies, you know, that I've done over the years, although I heard it was like up until seven. And then after that, depending on who the parents are, you know, outside of the veil dropping and there's no more remembering, it is that they've been so indoctrinated into this physical experience that it's that they just can't remember. But eventually, you know, if that's the study that they choose, you know, will remember and will remember
right.
all of it. But you know, and it's just, I don't know, life is amazing. It really is. And even with the lessons of death and illness and, you know, with all of those lessons thrown in, it's still, as hard as it is when you're going through it or we're going through it individually, collectively, eventually, it all comes back around to something worthwhile, you know.
It does.
And,
it does.
You know, now, we have about 10 minutes left because I know you have a conference call. And but I know that you also work with companies large and small. You help them break into new established markets. And you do have out-of-the-box thinking. And what are some of the new things that you're working on? Because this is going to be my fodder for the next time that you are my guest. I hope you come back because this fascinates me as well. But you're working on some really big things right now. Do you want to share?
We are. Yeah, I can share part of it. But before I jump into that, you know, just to sort of tie into what you were just saying, you know, one of the things that, you know, I never really had was an open mind. I was so closed-minded. I was raised, you know, as a Catholic. I was an altar boy. No, never abused. I will throw that in there. as a young altar boy. But, you know, we were very traditional Italian religion. We were a very religious, traditional Italian family.
Right.
You know, we'd go to church on Sundays and, you know, get the family together after church. And, you know, it was the typical upbringing of an Italian family.
Right.
And so, you know, we're raised with this religious mind, and I'm not saying any of this to knock religion or anybody's specific beliefs, but you know, we're raised with these blinders that this is how it is and this is what you need to believe in. And then my parents converted to a different faith, and so then I was, you know, 15 or 14 or 15, and then now I've being taught these things, and it was so restrictive and so limiting. But I didn't ask the questions, and it wasn't until much later in life that I started questioning things. And my point is, ask the questions. Ask the hard question. Never take what people tell you as truth, you know, especially when it comes to faith and belief and, you know, God and what his purpose is for us. You know, ask those questions. I did, but I did it much later in life. And that's how I started learning, because I was really curious. I really wanted to know, you know, which is why it opened me up to, you know, speaking and, you know, interviewing people like Wayne Dyer and Deepak Chopra and Barbara DeAngelis and all of those folks, and Dr. Michael Newton, who, you know, to this day is my favorite.
They were
the ones that, you know, answered questions. And even then, like when I read something like Dr. Newton's experience, and I'm going to make this one really quick. You know, when he talks about, you know, past lives, and all right, it makes sense, but, you know, is it real? I still question, is it real? Does it really happen? And then I had a friend of mine who for months, when I was doing radio in Miami, you know, wanted me to go and visit and go to a session, a past life regression. And I just refused. I just didn't want to do it. I'm like, you know, well, let's just come on, you know, come on the show. We'll talk about it. But she refused to come on the show until I actually went through the experience. So to amuse her, I said, fine, I'll go. So I, you know, long story short, I go to her office and going through this, you know, the whole experience of this past life regression, not believing for a moment that anything was actually happening. And so when she asked me questions, I told her, I said, I'm just making stuff up. She goes, that's fine. Go with it. Whatever you make up, just go with it. I'm like, all right, I'm just making this up, just so you know.
I laugh as a transgression therapist. I go ahead.
But, you know, I'm like, you know, eyes wide open going. She goes, Frank, just close your eyes and just pull it out of the air. It doesn't matter. Just go with it. I'm like, all
exactly.
Right. So the quick story is, you know, I'm apparently this little girl, child, and I, you know, pulled sort of back and saw the leather patent shoes and the dress, and she said, you know, what do you see in the scene? And there was my mother leaning up against the car, and we were on a hill, and up at the top of the hill was my dad next to the house. He said, well, what are you thinking? I said, well, I'm really upset right now because my mother doesn't believe me and isn't protecting me because my dad's being abusive. My father's an abusive father. Long story short, you know, come out of that, and I'm like, okay, whatever. I, this was in Florida. I go to Toronto to visit, you know, my family, and I'm actually sitting down having coffee with a friend of mine who we were in a relationship with for a while.
Right.
And sitting there, and, you know, I said, you'll never believe what I just did. And she said, what? I said, I did a past life regression. It was hysterical. She goes, no way. I did the same thing. I'm like, oh, tell me about yours first. She proceeded to describe the exact same scene that I had in my vision. And the funny or the interesting or weird part of it all was, I said, who is the mother? And she said, I was, meaning her. And I said, and who was the little girl? She looked up at me, she goes, you were. Back then I had hair. I had this spine tingling chill that kind of went down my back, and the hair that I did have on my back just kind of went, and I'm like, oh my god, this stuff really, it's real. She had no way of knowing anything.
Right.
So when someone can describe verbatim everything that I had seen 2,000 miles away with someone else,
that you thought you were making
pretty
up.
Crazy.
Yeah, right.
And
right,
here I am.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I'm laying on this, you know, patient's bed, whatever, going, I'm just making this stuff up, you know, just like, hey, I just want you to know.
Yeah.
You know, and then,
and she's like, yeah,
boom.
Go ahead. Continue. Make it up.
Exactly.
You know, and,
so
you know,
the
funny thing
is
go ahead. I want to hear your funny thing.
That was sort of my experience to sort of share and say, you know what, ask the questions, read the books, learn, open your mind, because there is much more to our lives than what we are told and how we live our lives. And, you know, this journey is such a beautiful journey. And we limit ourselves because of our beliefs and what we're told and about how to live our life. And that's what's sad. And I think it's really sad. So I just wanted to throw that story in.
Oh, I love that story. Thank you for sharing that story. And the funny thing is you don't even have to believe in a past life to experience it at all. And and I'm not sure how yours went, but once we cross, once we go, when we visit death, we go to the other side and we find out what's happening. And then I talk with the oversoul to find out why that life was important. What are we learning? Is there, sickness that can be healed now in this body? Those types of things. And every single time, and I kid you not, every single time I have had a male go through a past life experience, and when he crosses over into the other side and experiences unconditional love for the first time, they break down and cry. That to me is amazing, because I've had some women that cry, but and not to be gender biased, unconditional love, we have for our children, but we should. I don't really know. I haven't taken a poll on that yet, but we think we have unconditional love, but we place conditions on those that we're involved with. I hate you when you do this. Well, then, or I don't like you when you do this, or you make me this. And it's like, no. Those are what we call conditions.
Yeah,
you either love
exactly.
somebody or you don't love somebody. I mean, period. End of the story. There's no tween, with that. And, learning to live your life from an unconditional perspective, and it has to come from loving yourself first, unconditionally, accepting
exactly.
your flaws and standing right where you stand and say, so what, and I love myself, and learning that whole point. I mean, that's the whole point, is to learn to love yourself unconditionally first. Then you can branch
right.
out and start loving other people unconditionally, and I'm
right.
I'm an unconditional person overall, but that's years and years and years and years of training, and learning to let go of certain character flaws, or and saying, it's okay, so what, I like
the one thing,
being unique.
I agree.
Exactly.
And that's the one thing that sort of.
Go ahead.
It would be boring. We'd be boring.
Yeah, right.
Life would be boring.
It would be very boring,
But to your point, the underlying tone through all the different religions that exist in the world is unconditional love.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that I think needs to resonate above all else, like you had just said. And that really is the key. Love of self. In an unselfish way, and then love of everyone else. Because until we love ourselves unconditionally for who we are, the dark,
right.
the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever it is,
right.
Until we love all of us, like all of me completely, it's hard. It'll be very difficult to love someone else unconditionally with true love.
Exactly.
I know we're coming
exactly.
back to the top of the hour, and I kind of didn't say anything about the DNA stuff that I'm working on. But so
that's
in a nutshell...
Right.
We're going to have to do this on another show, but there
yes,
is some really
will.
Cool stuff coming out with genealogy
Yay.
That is beyond anything that anybody has ever experienced. And
I can't wait.
I'd love to share that with you when it's by the time it comes out, I'll be able to share results and details and actually have you go through one of the tests.
Awesome. And I one more quick thing before I let you go, unless it just went out of my head, is that, poof, gone.
I told you, you got to write these things down. As we get older, we forget.
Yeah, well, no, my brain, it just moves at such a quick rate. It's not even funny. But, selfish, hyphen the word. It becomes of the self. The word selfish has been bastardized, and in the dictionary they squished it together to make it a negative thing, and it really isn't. It should be hyphenated, and then becomes of the self. So in any event, Frank, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate you more than you will ever know, and I know you have to get to your next phone call. What is your blog, so anybody wants to go check you out, or your website?
Frank SD, as in, Sam David, franksd.wordpress.com.
Perfect. Frank, thank you so much. Enjoy
thank
the rest
Karen.
Of your day, and
wonderful.
I can't wait to catch up with you. All right?
Namaste. Take care.
All right. Namaste, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, and that was Frank Guzzo with a very interesting call, overcoming personal tragedy, and I truly believe parents should not have to bury their children, and it's very, very sad. We actually didn't get to the life-altering change that Frank has eventually gone to, and perhaps in our next conversation we will. Next week, though, do tune in. My guest is going to be musician Sean Faust, and I can't wait because he's going to sing to us. How fun is that? All right, you guys, everyone, thanks for listening. I appreciate all of you. Have a great, great day.